dinged up in last night's game? Or are you a weekend warrior that still thinks you got what it takes to play, but nagging injuries are slowing you down? It's time to talk to some of the region's top sports medicine specialists. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show. All you ever wanted to know about sports medicine, and maybe just a little bit more.
Oh, welcome into the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. I'm Mike McGivern alongside Dr. Brian McCarty. Man, it's good to see you, sir.
Thanks, buddy.
It's been a while.
It has been a while, yeah. But back in the saddle again.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. Thank you. So do you.
You bet. High school football.
Of course, we always look good.
I always look good.
We're on radio, remember?
Yeah. We are very handsome men. Hey, high school football week three, it's already in the books, which is incredible to me. And
every year it appears that they start earlier.
And they're going to next year, too.
Pretty soon they're going to start in April. And
actually, July.
Yeah,
I know. End of July next year is crazy.
We actually, believe
end
it or
July
not.
End of July next year?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, believe it or not, as the orthopedic surgeons who provide coverage, it actually causes some issues because we have so many people out of town at that time of the end of the year with all the kids coming back to school after that. But here we are, week three, and things are rolling along. Unfortunately, we've had a bunch of injuries already in that realm as well. So,
and I have one quick one to ask you about. There's the coach coming in, head coach from Arrowhead, coming in after you and from 10 to noon. First game against Homestead, a starting quarterback, non-throwing collarbone broken. On a touchdown run, he just got into the end zone and got crushed pretty good and broke his collarbone. And what's the best case scenario for somebody like that?
Best case scenario for that's 8 weeks. And there's really no shorting it. You know, this is the same injury that Tony Romo had, you know, a couple of years ago.
Right.
He actually did it twice, which is a bit unusual. But 8 weeks for a contact sport. Remember, we're not playing, you know, it's not tennis. So to get back to this, he'll be feeling better in about 3 to 4 weeks, but he won't be able to take contact with that for another, for totally 8 weeks, which, you know, basically puts you through to the playoffs.
Right. Wow. Hey, I want to, if we can, the Badgers start today at 2:30 and wanted to talk, get your take on a couple of different Badger stories. The first one, offensive lineman Dan Valls has retired from football. He was the number one ranked center and the 52nd best overall prospect in the 2017 draft. He tore the ACL and also suffered meniscus damage when he injured his right knee against Illinois last year. And his quote was, look, it's due to physical reasons. It was a hard decision to make. It's been 3 or 4 days, a lot of thinking and talking to people within the program and family members, and decided to retire completely from football. That must have been a heck of an injury because that's a tough kid.
Well, you know, this brings up something that as a sports medicine orthopedic surgeon who deals with these injuries every day is a really good thing to bring up, which is not all of these injuries are the same. You know, as we go through the show today, for those of you who are listening and are curious, we're going to really break down exactly what has happened to some of these players, including Tony Romo, Teddy Bridgewater, even, you know, Jordy Nelson. And why are they different? Why are the injury severities different? In this case, you know, this is a really terrible situation. Now, I happen to have treated three of these in the last 7 days where there's multiple injuries to ligaments, meniscus, cartilages in the knee. And it's something I spend most of my life fixing, these types of problems. And most often these days, we can get things repaired well enough that people can get back out and participate again. But it's not true that all of these injuries will allow people to go back. I mean, here you're talking about a guy who's a top draft prospect, super strong,
right,
super motivated, really disciplined, great training staff, the whole shooting match, right? I'm sure he had great surgical treatment. And his injury is so bad that he knows that his knee is going to be, you know, a bucket of bones here if he keeps playing. And maybe he just knows he can't play, you know, that he can't do what he did before. And you know, as a fan, you look at that and you go, oh, really? The guy's quit, you know, but you don't understand what it's like.
Right.
And I have to tell you, I do, because I see it every day in my office. We see it every day in surgery. Some of these injuries are far more severe than others. And we're going to talk about that for a whole segment about Teddy Bridgewater. And I don't want to get on a little rant, but I saw a little video clip this morning because I always sort of brush up on what the media has been saying. And Dr. Oz did this thing about Teddy Bridgewater's thing that was hilariously wrong and terribly inaccurate. And this is why we do this show.
We talked about this a lot. The Big Show mentioned
Dr. Oz.
Yeah, that's the Big Show mentioned it yesterday that we're going to do this. And then we, last night on our scoreboard show, in fact, Mosh sponsors one of the quarter breaks when we talk about different scores from all around the area. And I rewrote that to let people know that this is one of the segments that we're going to talk about is what's been said wrong and what really is that injury, and you were going to dig into that. And we're going to do that in the second segment, if that's okay. A couple other questions for you with the Wisconsin Badgers, who, again, kick it off today, 2:30 at Lambeau Field against LSU. Inside linebacker T.J. Edwards fractured his left foot this summer. He didn't participate in fall camp. He was left off the first depth chart of the season. He thought, and he was saying, look, I heard him talk about this, hoping to play this week. As early as this week, he thought there's a chance he was going to play. He is not, and now they're not really saying when he's going to be back in. But a fractured left foot, and he did it this summer. I don't know the date on it, but that's a tough one to come back that quickly from, isn't it?
Well, again, this comes down to what it is. Most of these injuries, and I don't know his specific issue, but most of them are what are called metatarsal fractures. They're usually the bones in the mid part of your foot. And a lot of these people try to treat non-operatively, which is the typical way you would do that. If it's a very specific type of fracture called a Jones-type fracture in the outside part of the foot, they normally will just put a screw in it right away. We actually had a patient of ours who ended up being a national champion soccer player in college who had that injury and was back out playing in 8 weeks, which is kind of the typical thing. In his case, obviously, the fracture's not healed.
Right.
So they can't let him play, and they don't know exactly when he's going to be back yet because they don't know yet exactly when it's going to be fully healed. This, remember Kevin Durant?
Yes.
And his injury?
Yep.
And remember how they kept saying he's about to come back? And then all of a sudden he'd be out?
Right.
Well, that's the same thing that's happened here. It looks like it's healing. It looks like it's healing. Looks like it's on track. Next thing you know, they take an x-ray. It's not healed. You can't let the guy go play.
So they'll wait, and yep, rightfully so, till he's ready. Here's the last one, and this was from August 7th. Junior safety Dakota Dixon, he had a groin injury that led to be in the hospital. And here was the part I wanted to ask you about. It was reported that he lost 19 pounds the past spring due to that injury. Prior to the injury, he weighed 204 pounds, then dropped to 185 pounds. And I'm wondering, it was a groin injury, and that's the part that it says due to the injury he lost this weight, that I have no idea what they're talking about.
Well, that's this doesn't completely add up. A groin injury doesn't typically lead to hospitalization unless it's a hip dislocation. And a hip dislocation is not a groin injury.
Right.
So that's when the ball and socket actually come apart, which I don't think is what this sounds like. So the whole thing sounds maybe like he had an infection.
Okay.
You know, maybe.
Yeah.
But again, I hate to speculate on these things because we don't know the specifics of that problem. I can tell you that these types of things, when somebody loses a bunch of weight, it's either from lack of conditioning. In other words, he couldn't lift, right?
Okay.
So if he couldn't lift, he lost a lot of leg mass. And these guys' legs, I don't know how many of you see Division I or professional athletes like I do, but their legs are enormous and they're just solid muscle. So, you imagine how fast and strong these guys are. If they can't do the weightlifting, which he couldn't do if he had this groin problem, he would lose a lot of weight in the legs. So that's a possible
explanation. So the way this was written, it caught my attention because it says, he lost 19 pounds
yeah.
due to this injury, but never kind of got into any of that. Hey, before we get to a break, Jeff Janis now has a club on his hand. He's a receiver, so that's not a very good thing. But, he still thinks he plays special teams. He broke it, his hand, and they put screws. They inserted screws in the hand, which they do with that type of injury.
Well, they do if it's displaced enough. So to put screws in a finger in a pro player, it has to be pretty bad, meaning it has to be displaced significantly. So this was in his index finger, which is obviously very important if you're a receiver. You kind of need all your fingers, I would expect. But if the index finger is broken badly enough to require screws, they're going to be very careful. He won't be catching passes for at least 8 weeks, I would suspect.
Yeah, and it's been three or four. So
yeah.
But I saw him with that club on, and you know, you could see a linebacker or a defensive lineman,
yeah,
or even an offensive lineman sometimes have those on.
Special teams, he could probably play.
Probably still play.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
And for those of you listening who don't know what a club is, it's a big cast, essentially, that they cover with a half-inch foam pad. That's why it looks so enormous. And they do that for obvious reasons, because they don't want guys using the cast as an actual club, which they would do.
Yeah, back in the day they would. Yeah, there's a couple, you know, Dick Butkus and Nitschke and those guys certainly would.
Yeah, so if, after this break, for anybody listening out there who's interested in fantasy football, which our draft is tonight, just so you know.
Oh, your family
yeah,
one?
Yeah, I am the multiple-time third-place champion of our league. And we're going to go through a lot of these injuries so that you can have a sense of when you might be picking up some of these players.
One of the drafts that I'm in, I don't know what I was thinking, but I decided to take all these guys that are suspended or out for a couple weeks. So I just got to survive the first 4 weeks.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, Mike.
Yeah. Well, the value was there. So I'm a big value guy. We're going to get to a break. Other side of the break, we're going to take the second segment, and we're going to talk about Teddy Bridgewater, and we're going to talk about that injury, and it's a horrific injury.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about knee dislocations and what that means, because I'm sure there are people out there who said, wait a minute, they told me I dislocated my knee. Why didn't I get all these tests? There are different types of dislocations,
right.
And so I want to demystify some of that. I even brought in a model for you, Mike, so we can look at it.
I noticed
that. And you
can
see what's what.
I'm looking forward to that. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. To the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. That music is brought to you by Dr. Brian McCarty, back in the saddle again. It's a great, you know, since you were, last couple of weeks, I got to pick some of the music.
Oh, wow.
No, they actually won't still let me. But I have great ideas.
You see, so. This is where experience comes in, Mike. I know better than to allow this to occur.
Back in the saddle again, Aerosmith, that Dr. Brian McCarty. So let's talk about Teddy Bridgewater, and I have to be honest, there were people all over the board on this, on satellite from a national level, saying, no, this is what happened. No, this is what happened. And they all wanted to talk about, you know, the teammates crying and, you know, praying and some swearing, and it was a non-contact injury that is a lot more common. I learned that from hanging out with you. A lot more common, and it doesn't really surprise you. The Jordy Nelson one, where he just planted wrong, got up and walked off, and I couldn't believe it was an ACL, and you were like, no, I knew exactly what it was. So let's talk about Teddy Bridgewater and what actually happened.
Okay, well, I'm going to break this down into a couple of different ways. First of all, a knee dislocation is different than a kneecap dislocation. Okay, so patellar dislocations, where the kneecap dislocates and slips out of the groove of the joint. So the kneecap, for people listening in the car or wherever you may be, the kneecap sits in a little groove called the trochlear groove, and that groove can be, in some people, quite shallow, and sometimes the kneecap can actually pop out of the groove. And some of them just do it by twisting. Some of them do it by contact, like we see in football. That is a different injury completely than a knee dislocation. Okay, just to be clear.
Okay.
So knee dislocation is when the tibia, which is the shin bone below your knee, and the femur above your knee are completely separated. So there usually it's because of what we call varus or valgus force, meaning there's a sideways force applied. And in Teddy Bridgewater's case, this would be broken down into what's called a lower velocity type injury, non-contact. So, for example, a lot of these occur from falls from a height, like somebody coming off a ladder or off a side of a, you know, a ledge. A lot of them come from car accidents or motorcycle accidents, very common in motocross, where they put that leg down and sometimes the leg will get trapped under the bike. These are high energy, okay? His would be a relatively low energy, but still limb-threatening injury. Now, why limb-threatening? What does that mean? That means that some people with this injury will not only tear the lateral ligament, they'll not only tear all what we call the posterolateral ligament complex, which is a set of five additional ligaments around the knee. They'll tear the meniscus, the PCL ligament, and then the peroneal nerve, which goes around the outside of your knee, and the blood vessel called the popliteal artery behind the knee. And this is what happens in these injuries in some cases. There was a famous running back for UCLA who had this injury in contact, where he got hit from the front, hyperextended his knee, and he literally lost his leg. Okay, so this can disrupt the artery behind the knee, and that's the only major artery that supplies the lower leg. So that's why the training staff did such a great job. And I mean, let's face it, we're all trained to do this, okay? So you see that injury where the knee is out of place, they immediately reduce the knee, meaning they pull on it to straighten it, and then they rush them to the hospital. Why? Because they have to get testing for the blood vessels to make sure that they're intact. Now, in his case, fortunately, the nerve is still working, the peroneal nerve is working, and the blood vessel's working. That's huge. Now, I told you I treated several of these in the last few weeks. Most of them, that's the case. The ones that aren't, the first thing you got to do is get the blood vessel repaired, you know, to save the leg. And it sounds crazy, right? You're saying, well, wait a minute, the guy just planted his knee. Well, that's the job number one. So in his case, his leg is safe, okay? His nerve is working. So now it's a matter of repairing all the damage that's been done. Now, I can tell you, having treated these are very complex injuries. So they will give it a few days to get the swelling down. But this is not like the knees, like I was making sort of fun of Dr. Oz's description, where he said that they literally pulled apart like you're pulling a rubber band apart. That's not at all what happened. What happened is he planted, the knee rotated out of place, and then because of the angle, he probably landed more, put more force through it, and that completed the tearing of the rest of the knee. So these are really, really, really bad injuries, and very few players can come back completely to normal from this. Now, again, I'm not treating Bridgewater.
Right.
I feel terrible for the kid. Look, I know he's a Viking and whatever, but he's not. He's a person.
Right.
And as a guy, I feel horrible for him. You know, depending on all what's torn, if they can get everything fixed up acutely, you know, if I were treating him, I'd still be fairly optimistic based on the fact that you're getting to the injury fairly quickly. But this is at the very high end of these injuries.
So when I read a couple of questions for you, and I thought, you got to be kidding, but I read the quote that trainers may have saved his leg and career by quick action.
Yes.
That's true.
That is true. Yeah. And you know what? Trainers do that every day. And that's what they're there for.
Right.
You know, so when we're like I called one of our trainers that I've worked with for years, Joe Szczesinski, who's been at Brookfield East forever. He's tremendous. And all of our trainers are like this. But, you know, when we have a limb threatening injury or any other injury, severe concussion, neck injury, anything else, urgent action is what saves the day. And that's what they're trained to do. So did they do the right thing and do a great job? Absolutely.
But and this is what they're there for.
That's what they're there for. And that's why we have these teams. You know, Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine, the MOSH Sports Medicine Program, has 30-some teams of people treating all these people from the professional level at the wave all the way down to the little league level.
Right.
You know, so that's what we're there for, and that's what we enjoy. We enjoy being able to be there and make these situations as good as they can be, right? They're bad situations, but we want to make them as good as we can.
With everything that happened to him, can you step us through, and I don't know if there's, you know, just a norm as far as what the surgery would entail. Is it one surgery where you take care of everything? Mm-hmm. Is it four surgeries? What do you think will go on with him?
In his case, I would certainly be doing this all at once. In his case. Now, in some of the cases, you have to do it staged. So sometimes you have to move the meniscus back in place, get that repaired, repair the side ligaments, and then come back again to do the other. But most of the time, for me anyway, having treated a lot of these, we like to try to get everything fixed up at the same time. And I'm sure that that's what they will try to do for him. And I would feel comfortable. Again, understanding that as severe as this is, in the grand scheme of things, this is a lower energy knee dislocation. The higher energy ones where there's a blood vessel disrupted, you can end up with all kinds of other really, really complex problems like compartment syndromes in the leg and all this. So those sometimes you're ending up with multiple stages along the way before you can actually even worry about the ligaments in the knee. But that's not the case for Teddy Bridgewater.
Now, I don't think he's had the surgery yet, correct?
I don't believe so. I think they'll probably be giving it a few days to try to get the swelling to come down a little bit, try to get some early range of motion, and then they'll go ahead and get him fixed up. So
how long of a surgery, if you were going to do this all at once with what you know, and you're not treating him or doing the surgery, but could you estimate how long that surgery might last?
Well, I'll give you a spectrum. Okay. I'm a fairly efficient surgeon. I'm never in a rush, but I also don't waste a lot of time. And I fix hundreds of ACLs a year, or over 100 ACLs a year. One of the cases we recently did with a knee dislocation took us about 2 hours. Another one, we literally repaired the ACL, the PCL, the patellar tendon, the lateral collateral ligament, the biceps femoris tendon, the IT band, the lateral meniscus. I mean, and so it was, you know, like 2.5 to 3 hours, which is unbelievably quick for that, right? But that's the thing. The key to this is you identify everything that's torn, and then you fix everything. There's a sort of a sequence for those of us that do this to repair each step along the way.
For somebody like Bridgewater, he gets out of surgery. It's going to be a while before he can put any weight on that, correct?
Yeah, they'll keep him probably off of weight bearing. They'll put him in a motion machine called a CPM machine, or at least I would. One of the big risks after you fix all this stuff is stiffness. So you put it on, get in a range of motion machine called a continuous passive motion or CPM machine to kind of get early motion without risking too much strain on the ligament repairs. And then basically start some rehab exercises probably within the first couple of days. I would, you'd have him doing straight leg raises and hip strengthening, doing upper body training. I mean, when we're doing this stuff, you know, you're training everything around that injury from the right get go. I mean, day after back, start to do some training. You can't let these guys sit.
Yeah,
you can't. You're going to move them. Whatever can be moved gets moved. Whatever can be trained gets trained.
So if this was a guy that you know, worked here at the radio station and did it, you know, playing soccer at Eline, the difference between his support group, mm-hmm. I mean, think about the support group that Bridgewater's going to have, and you're talking about a special athlete, mm-hmm. you know, a high-class athlete. There's a chance he can come back from this.
Yes.
And I'm sure they're thinking that a year from now, he'll be ready to go. That seems quick to me with an injury like this.
Well, remember, all the injuries heal at the same time. So, the ACL's healing as the lateral collateral ligament's healing as all these other. So, the long-term recovery really shouldn't be that much different. It'll be a little bit more difficult for him and a little bit higher risk for him. But if everything heals properly, they're all healing at the same time.
Okay.
So the overall time back, I mean, we just went through, I had a discussion with some of my patients yesterday, you know, a young man who's got multiple meniscus tears and ACL deficiency. So we reconstructed his ACL and fixed up all these meniscus problems. So in the early going, we have to be much more careful with him because he's got unstable meniscus problems. We're going to be working on getting him healed with that. Whereas normally for me, we don't have a brace. They can weight bear as tolerated right off the bat from an ACL, right? With this, we have to limit weight bearing. We have to do a CPM machine. We have to use a brace to protect the meniscus. But once those things are healed, he'll be right back on the normal recovery course from an ACL tear.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. How much pain do you think? That had to be extremely painful for
him.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll tell you, anybody who's had one of these injuries can tell you they don't feel good.
Right.
And, you know, his is obviously more severe, so he would have more pain. But you know what? I'll tell you, honestly, I think the psychological pain is the hardest part.
I bet.
I treated two really excellent football players in our high school area yesterday with these injuries, and it's really difficult. And they're, you know, these guys are so dedicated to what they're doing. And their families are so dedicated, and their coaches are too. And so part of the whole thing is just allowing everything to sink in, get past that part of it, get everything repaired, and then focus on the future. And that's exactly what he's doing. You know, do you hear that quote he had? Where he said, I won't let this be my legacy, right? That he's been redirected. He's redirected himself to the future, and he's looking forward, and he's going to be, you know, he's going to give it a shot, and hopefully he'll be okay.
Look, again, I am not a Viking guy, But I'll tell you what, hear nothing but really good things to
say. Well, I was going to say, you know how athletes sometimes tear their ACLs and then continue to play?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and that happened to Giovanni Gallardo that one year. He tore his ACL fielding a ground ball, and he pitched like another two innings. How does that work? Isn't it painful enough if you really blew out your knee? I mean, I don't know how he would be able to pitch on that unless you don't know.
Well, it's a really great question. And you remember we talked about the spectrum of these injuries just a minute ago? So the spectrum of that injury is the same way Jordy Nelson ran off the field. So a lot of those tears are actually degenerated ACLs that tear. They don't bleed a lot right away. So the guys kind of feel like, I tweaked my knee, but I'm going to be all right. And he's a pitcher, right? So he's not thinking he tore his ACL.
Yeah.
And so that's how that happens. And what's really concerning are the ones who do that. And then, like one of our athletes recently, who kind of talked his way into getting back on the field, and then does it again, and then they tear more things. So, you know, that's the difficulty with those situations. And again, that's why we have these expert trainers and the therapists and us and everybody that works on our sports med team to get you there. So,
hey, we're going to get to a break. Thank you for that, and thank you for bringing that modeling, because it makes a lot of sense to me now. And I know our listeners can't see it, but. Thank you for that. I think I didn't realize, and I didn't see the Dr. Oz thing, but I would have been believing him. And when you came in, you were laughing.
Well, you know, he tries to make it simple for people, and I understand that. And I hate to be so critical, but we started this show kind of for this reason.
Correct.
Because it drives you crazy. I mean, even the way that the trainer described, it wasn't the trainer, it was a different trainer described what happened. You know, they make it like so simplistic, which is neat, except it's not right.
Right. And we do that in sometimes from this studio and some of the shows that we do.
Yep.
Because maybe our guys don't understand it.
Well, they have opinions, you know, about what the guy should do or this or that or the other thing. But, you know, unless you're informed about what's really going on. So, anyway, we'll hope that he makes a great recovery despite the fact that he plays for the Vikings. Because
he's a good, nice young man from what I hear.
We like people first, don't we?
He is Dr. Brian McCarty. You can go to mymosh.com, get more information on Dr. McCarty and the group. And I can't say enough good things about those guys. Again, mymosh.com. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. For the first time in a long time, I got to at least pick the band. Hey,
yeah.
That's a big step for
you
us.
You know what? That is a sign of our growing trust in relationships. Mike wanted feelings.
Yeah, I know.
But
you know what?
You two is a good choice.
That's not true. You said you probably want something like feelings. Hey, before we move on from the Teddy Bridgewater topic, the difference for him to get back compared to a guy like you or I or Mitch, what's the difference?
Well, it's kind of ironic, okay? So he obviously, sadly for us, is more conditioned than we are. Now, those of you who can't see us don't know how incredibly well-conditioned we are for normal people. But nonetheless, Teddy Bridgewater is a high-level professional athlete. However, his demand level to get back to doing what he does is extraordinarily high, where ours is not so much. So it's a little bit easier, actually, for us to get back to everyday living stuff and doing our normal work days than it is for him. So most of these guys, you look at Jordy Nelson as an example, right, of someone who had an ACL tear, didn't have the whole knee dislocation, and they're not letting him back out for a full year from the injury. Now, that date is not set by some sort of, gong that goes off and says biologically suddenly yesterday he wasn't ready and today he is. It's set by guidelines based on information that we have that shows that as time goes on, the rate of re-injury goes down. If you really wanted to make it the lowest, you'd go down, you know, maybe 2 years or 3 years, right? But you just can't do that with any of these athletes. For me, a lot of my athletes get back out somewhere in the 6 to 9 month range, depending on the sport, right? So my tennis players can get out there a lot earlier than my football players.
Sure.
Because of the risk of re-injury. In his case, for him to get back to playing level, to be back at a year would be an exceptional recovery, I think. For Teddy Bridgewater, I'm talking about. Now, for Jordy Nelson, he's felt like he's been ready to go for months. And so he's chomping at the bit. And they're holding him back because they just don't want to take any chance. He gets hurt doing some preseason thing that they don't need him doing.
Do we know in everything I'm looking, I don't know this, left knee or right knee?
I don't recall which knee it is.
So his plant knee?
It doesn't make any difference.
It doesn't?
No, it really doesn't. And for those people, by the way, talking about misinformation, the stuff I was reading online about this was absolutely hilarious. They were going crazy about the field turf and the new stadium and all this kind of stuff. And this is what happened. And you know, he wasn't even in the new stadium. He was in the practice facility. And it's a non-contact injury. And, you know, injuries sadly happen. And we don't want them to happen, but they happen. And in this case, you know, this guy has done what he did when he got hurt a million times. And believe me, if this were Aaron Rodgers, our lines would be lit up. People would be going crazy about what did they do to let this happen in the preseason and all this, you know. And the fact is, it could have been, okay? You know, it's just, this is bad luck for him is what it is. And it was bad luck for Jordy Nelson. Boy, he didn't do anything special, did he? He just planted and turned like he's done a million times.
We have some breaking news, actually. The Vikings have traded for Sam Bradford from the Eagles.
Aww.
A first-round pick.
Now we're in trouble.
So
they gave up a first-round pick.
Apparently, they plan on going for it this year.
Wow.
Well,
hey, speaking of quarterbacks, let's, if we can, in this segment, Tony Romo is out again, fracturing his back. And if you saw the hit, it was a physical, tough hit.
Yeah, for sure.
But, man, he was, you know, it was a minute and a half into that game, and it seems like he gets hurt a lot. I'm wondering, at one point, does he think about maybe, you know, hanging it up? But he said, look, I'm 10 weeks, I'm coming back. And when you saw that, did you see the hit?
I did, yeah. He, you know, he got hurt in his back, I think it was 2 years ago,
yes.
Right? And it was kind of a similar situation where he kind of curled up to try to absorb the blow. And what happens in that situation is the spine curves forward, and there's a lot of load that goes through what are called the discs and the vertebral bodies of the spine. So it's a little bit like the spine is a little bit like a set of bricks, one on top of the other. And in between the bricks where the cement would be, there are these discs that are filled with fluid, and they absorb a lot of this impact. What happened to him the last time around is he ruptured one of the discs, and so he needed to have surgery to take pressure off the nerve from a ruptured disc. What happened this time is he ended up with what's called a compression fracture, and a fracture is a broken bone. So, you know, when people say, oh, it's not broken, it's fractured, you know, we always kind of joke about this because they're really the exact same thing.
Right.
So a fracture just means there's a crack in the bone. A compression fracture, you know, when you take a sponge and you press down on it, and you see, you know, obviously you can compress the sponge, right? That's the same thing that happens in the vertebra when you have a compression fracture, is it gets crunched down a little bit. And a lot of people will get this type of injury again, maybe falling from a height or something, and it's painful. And within a few weeks, you're up walking around, and you don't usually need surgery unless it's quite severe. His sounds like it's not too severe. But again, to get out and play NFL football and have 300-pound dudes chasing you around trying to crush your vertebrae, for example, you need to have it fully healed.
Right.
So I think for him to be back at 10 weeks is probably, you know, probably about right. Maybe a little. I mean, if I were him, I would. This would be one of my last goes, I think.
Yeah.
You know, he's had a lot of breaks in his bones and a lot of severe injuries, but. You know what? He gets paid a lot of money. He hasn't played a lot the last couple of years. They've got a great team. So I'm sure he's thinking, I really want to try to get out there. People who are thinking, oh, he's going to risk being paralyzed from this, that's not true. This injury will not cause paralysis. So, you know, he can't just go play now, because then if he shattered the thing, it could injure the spinal column there.
Really quick question. Two players, offensive players, one for the Chargers, Brandon Oliver, one for the Ravens, Benjamin Watson, both have a torn right Achilles tendon.
Yeah.
Is that surgery? Did they repair the Achilles tendon and then back to a year? Is that what you're looking at?
That's what you're looking at.
That's a painful injury.
Well, it's, you know, it doesn't hurt that much. It's just it takes a long time to recover from it. So yeah, we repair these all the time. The Achilles tendon is a huge tendon that your whole calf muscle, you know, the calf people is made out of the three muscles. It's the lateral and medial gastrocnemius muscle and then the soleus muscle. These are really strong muscles. You think about what they do. They hold you up all day. So if they're not attached, it's hard to stand because you don't have anything to push off of. So when you push your foot down and you feel your calf tighten, that's what's happening, okay? The Achilles is the, think of it as a really thick rope or band of leather that attaches from the muscle into the heel bone called the calcaneus. The reason it's called the Achilles tendon is because mythologically, Achilles' mother dipped him in the river. Do you remember this
story? No, I don't.
Oh, so she took him when he was a baby and protected him from injury by dipping him in the river. And the way she did this is she held him by the heel, okay? And this is the Greek mythology. She dips him in the river and pulls him out, and he's protected from injury. He can't be injured anywhere else except where she was pinching his Achilles tendons.
Ah.
Okay, now why is that? Because they had these injuries way back then. That's why. So, these injuries aren't new. It's not like they just started happening. It's just we see them and hear about them so much more frequently because we can actually repair them. But all of these injuries obviously happened with all the Greek warriors and the ancient humans have had these injuries forever. And that particular spot is vulnerable to this. That's why it's called the Achilles tendon.
How hard is that surgery for you?
It's actually very simple.
It is.
Yeah, technically, it's a very simple thing.
Interesting.
The important thing for us is just retensioning the tendon properly. So we tension it exactly like the other one. But it's not a difficult surgery for us. It's just a lengthy recovery because the calf will atrophy or shrink really quickly afterwards. So in the old days, when I started all this, I've been in practice for 15 years now. We used to have people in casts, and then we would gradually take them out of the cast. Now we start early range of motion within a couple of weeks, and so the recoveries are a little quicker. That's why these guys are able to actually get back to playing. In the old days, that would often be a career ender.
That would be it. Hey, we were going to talk a little bit about training camps and stuff like that, and we'll do that on the other side of the break. I think there's some interesting – there's changes. They changed it, and we want to kind of touch on that before we get to the end of the show. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Welcome back, Mitch. Welcome back to the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan. Mike McGivern alongside Dr. Brian McCarty. Go to mymosh.com for more information on Mosh and Dr. McCarty. Hey, some changes during preseason and what NFL can do and the type of drills that the time that they take compared to what they used to is different. It's really changed. We had a guy on Faith in the Zone this week that played for Auburn, played for the Miami Dolphins when they were undefeated, and he was with Don Shula the first year Shula was there, and he said, we did 4-a-days. They did 4-a-day practices back then, and he started laughing when we talked a little bit about the changes they've made for health reasons.
Well, there are two reasons they made them. One of them is for health reasons, and the other is it's a collective bargaining agreement that's been struck with the players' union, and the players hated some of these practices. And so there were two reasons. Now, some of them are really good. Like, you remember, it wasn't that long ago that one of the Vikings linemen died from dehydration,
correct,
right?
Yep.
So that wasn't so good. And so that prompted a lot of changes. When something horrible happens, you always want to try to make a positive change out of it if you can. So they changed a lot of high school, college, and NFL parameters to when the heat index is over a certain degree, they shut down the practice or they make them take the pads off or whatever. And so, those of us, we've all been out on some 95 degree humid day. Well, imagine you're in pads and a helmet and you weigh 340 pounds. The amount of heat retention is enormous. So in the old days, they would deny you water, right? Remember?
Right.
You can't have water because you didn't work hard enough, And so nowadays, that part of it has really evolved. Now, I pulled up the Giants training camp schedule, which is now, they're all doing it differently, but they literally have no contact for much of the preseason. And so they can have one padded practice per day, and they can't have more than 3 to 4 hours on field per day. So the things really have changed a lot. Now, what I have also heard is that the complexity of the schemes is so much higher than it used to be that they spend a ton more time in classroom. And so some of the players are kind of saying like what our kids say to us about technology, you know. Well, yeah, okay, old man, you know, that's what it used to be like. But,
sure,
you know, and to some degree, they're probably right. There's an evolution of this process. But I will say that when you see, whether it be in high school or college, you know, you deal with the coaches show after this, and they're always complaining about how the kids can't tackle because they're not having enough chance to tackle. You know, it's a balancing act between guarding player safety. Now we know that recurrent hits, recurrent impacts are not good for you. So how do you just let kids go ahead and just hit all day like they used to?
Right.
I mean, we used to have drills, right, where they would just throw the ball out and guys would just dive at it and crash into each other to get the ball. It was
right.
That was a standard drill.
All the time, along with nutcracker drill,
yeah,
where you're just basically hitting guys as you run as fast
hard
as, you can,
as you can
and hit them as hard as you can.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, for football, just for the game of football, that was good because, right, because you're going to do that in a game. And so you figure, oh, let's get this desensitization out of the way. But for your brain and for the rest of your body, not so good. So we're compromising here a little bit and saying we don't want these repetitive hits to cause later problems. We want kids to be able to still play. We want them to be safe. So we change things. So not only has this occurred in the NFL, but it's occurred at college and it's occurred at high school. And so in the colleges, they try to skirt around it. They do the same thing in high school. They have player practices.
Right.
Right?
Yeah,
they do. And the some of them are very well managed. But nonetheless, the point being, we have placed a higher emphasis on player safety. And I think that these changes are good overall. We may not like them when guys are missing tackles the first few weeks of the season and they're not hitting as hard as they used to. But you know what? When you think about it, people as human beings, not as video game players or fantasy players like we like to think of them as.
Yes.
But you think of them as human beings, and I know a bunch of these people. You know, this. I'd rather have them safe, and I'd rather have them be able to play the sport that we all love rather than have these issues later on and you kind of go, well, what are you doing, you know?
You know, the reason the Wisconsin Football Coaches Association show with Coach Tom Swiddle, why we started this, is the WFCA, with the changes they've made at the high school level and the youth level, feel as though football is safer than it's ever been, but nobody's telling that story. It's still a contact sport. Mm-hmm. It's still a dangerous sport. Guys are getting hurt. But there's a number of things going on at the youth level and the high school level to get it as safe as it can possibly be, yet the numbers all over the place are way down.
Yeah. Well, what you're saying is true, and the response is a response to the fact that it's still a dangerous sport, and so it's really difficult. You know, it is true that the supervision, the sports medicine, the athletic training, all of these things, the coaching, the way they tackle, all the technology, all of that is better than it's ever been in the past. So it is true that these sports are safer than they've been before. The difficulty is it's hard for a parent or a young athlete to judge, like, what are we going to know 20 years from now?
Right.
What are we going to know 10 years from now? And that's why it's hard for people to make the choice about how to spend their time. So I do think, though, that it is important for people to know that we're making as many changes to make these sports as safe for the participants as possible. And allow them to do what they love to do, but also minimize the potential risk for them later on.
You know, Coach Swiddle is talking, and his son has played football since fourth grade. He's now in college, and he's played quarterback. Never had a concussion. His daughter's a soccer player. Had to stop playing at UWM because she got, I think, three or four concussions mm-hmm. through her soccer career. And he said, you know, nobody's telling kids to stop playing soccer, but a lot of people are telling kids to stop playing football.
Well, he's making a point. I mean, there is risk in all of these sports. Soccer is a very tough sport on people, and they play it year round. So that's another thing people don't talk much about is that, you know, per hour, you know, the football injuries are a lot higher, right? Because the number of hours is so many fewer because the sport's only played for a few months a year. Soccer is a year-round sport, and football, by the way, should never become a year-round sport.
Ever.
You know,
but
soccer is—they play it constantly. Now they have tried to make some significant headway with that as well. Where in soccer, you know, they're seriously talking, if they haven't already, eliminating headers. And why is that? Well, because a header—you take a header from 20 yards out, you know, you're basically getting a mild concussion,
right?
So they're talking about eliminating that. Obviously, if you're up in the air and you get undercut, which happens a lot during heading, a lot of kids land and hit their head. So, you know, the point he's making is valid in some ways, and something that I think everyone needs to keep in mind. Bottom line is, we want our kids to be smart. We want our kids to be productive in the future, and we want them to enjoy the sports and have a good time competing, but not end up, you know, having problems.
And you'll agree with this. There's so many lessons that can be learned through athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that as a parent, you have to make up your mind. You have to decide. And if you believe football is safe and your son or daughter, the kicker at Oak Creek, you know, enjoys playing football, then just make sure that the youth program in the high school you're going into, you know, takes that seriously. And I think that's important.
I agree with you 100%. I will say that through Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine and our programs, we have made this a huge point of emphasis. You know, we sit and talk to the parents ahead of time, the coaches, and the coaches like Coach Swiddle and all the other coaches we work with Maz, you know, Marquette,
sure.
People I've worked with, terrific. You know, they respect what we tell them. We've all made changes for the better, and we want to keep our athletes as safe as possible.
It's really good to see you again.
Hey, it's great to see you too, Mike.
I love
Thanks.
Doing the show with you. It's always a pleasure for me.
Well, we'll do it again next week.
You bet. MyMosh.com for more information on Dr. Brian McCarty and the people at Mosh. Thanks for listening. This is the Midwest Orthopedic Sports Medicine Show on Sports Radio 105.7 FM, The Fan.